they're playing very hard. I think the scheme is what it is, but the players are playing hard. They believe in each other. You know, I noticed, and as you watch, you know, their effort to the football and the way that they chase and the way that they tackle. Those are great compliments to Spags and his staff, and obviously Andy as the head coach. They're explosive on offense. They're athletic. They're fast. It'll be a huge challenge.
That's Tennessee Titan head coach Mike Vrabel. What a job he has done as the Titans are in the AFC title game, and they will travel to Arrowhead to take on the Chiefs this Sunday. 2:05 is kick time for the AFC title game, and here to break it all down. And he's still with us. He didn't jump off a cliff like a lot of Chiefs fans were doing, down 24-0 this past Sunday, is our good friend Saran Petro, 810 WHB in Kansas City, host of the program middays from 2 to 6 p.m., Wow, we got to catch our breath, I still think, after that unbelievable comeback by the Chiefs this past Sunday. Were you freaking out? What was your feeling when the Chiefs were having a meltdown in the first quarter?
God, yes, I was freaking out. I mean, how could you not be? I mean, listen, all you got to do is read my Twitter timeline and know that I wasn't calm, cool, and collected as I sat in my basement, and neither were any of the people with me. You know, there's a group of us that used to go to all the games, you know, before we started having kids and everything. We'd be there every week, and we've kind of transitioned to getting together at people's houses, and we're just looking at each other going, okay, you know, where does this rank amongst our all-time playoff disappointments? We've been through them all. We've been through the 95 losing to the Colts. We've been to, you know, the no-punt game against the Colts. We've been to blowing 28-point lead against the Colts. We watched the Ravens blister us here. Herm Edwards have no shot against the Colts in a game against Peyton Manning in 06. You know, I mean, just nothing but heartbreak and misery. And, of course, last year, lining up offsides, negating an interception, which would have sent him to the Super Bowl. It felt like, and I thought the look on Andy Reid's face was kind of the same, like, what do I have to do to win a playoff game? Now, I will tell you what's different is 15.
Yes.
15's different. And I think all of us were frustrated and angry, but I don't know, and I'll say this, if you were a Chiefs fan that gave up hope, then you should never give up hope again. That should have been the last lesson that Patrick Mahomes has to teach, and Patrick Mahomes plus Andy Reid has to teach to all the fans, is that you are never out of a game as long as you've got that guy. He can always bring you back. And where I was distraught, angry, you know, one of the statements I made was, I've waited 48 years on this planet to have a franchise quarterback under center and firing, and now everybody around him is going to blow it up, right? Yeah. Everybody else is going to lose it. A punt's going to get blocked. Tyreek Hill's going to muff a punt. They're going to blow coverages. Somehow, with a good team playing good football, everyone around the quarterback is going to blow it up. And in the end, you know, Patrick Mahomes, his team, Andy Reid, his staff, the whole organization deserves incredible credit for digging in and coming back and blowing the doors off the Texans.
I can't fully explain it, but I was watching the game with my 13-year-old son and, you know, saw the meltdown, as everybody else did, and it was 21-0, and my son said, that same old Chiefs choked, it's over, I told you they'd choke. And I said, you know, I think a few years ago I would have been freaking out, but I wasn't for some reason. Maybe it's because we have number 15. I don't know for sure why, but I was a little bit more calm and collected than I normally am. Maybe it's just because I'm kind of almost immune to what the Chiefs do. Maybe that was part of it too. But when it was 21-0, the thing I told my son was, here's the only good thing I can give you right now. It's so early. There's so much more game to be played. And I said, and we still have 15. And for me, I don't know if you agree with this. I've seen a lot of people talk about it, but I said it, and this is not hindsight. This was right when it happened. The Texans were up 21-0. And I don't know if they got a great spot, and it was fourth in inches or a fourth in a yard, and the Texans were going to go for it. And I immediately said, you go for it. You go for the kill shot. Everybody's about ready to walk out of the stadium. And if you get a field goal, that's a victory for the Chiefs because, one, it's still a three-score game, 21-0, 24-0. Granted, three touchdowns, three two-point conversions. And Bill O'Brien said after the game, well, we got to score points. He said we need to be aggressive before the game. And so they were going to, but there was a little bit of confusion as to whether or not they had a first down or not. He didn't challenge the play, which would have bought him some time, and they decided to kick a field goal. And when they went for the field goal, whether they made it or not, I told my son, I said, this is a small opening. And if the Chiefs can score right here, I said, I think there's a chance. And I'm not saying that, you know, I really, truly, fully believe that, but I just knew that it was early enough that maybe, just maybe, that was the break they needed. Because I think the Texans would have got a first down. I don't know if they would have. I don't know if they would have scored. In all fairness, they could have turned it over on the next play. But that little mini stop there when the Texans settled for three, I thought was just that slight door opening for the Chiefs to do something.
you know, we played this game with Tim Grunhard yesterday in the program and talked about it, talked it through, and how this scenario would come up. And when it would come up would be on a Thursday night. I said, you know, it's probably 11:30. You know, O'Brien and the offensive staff, or maybe the whole staff, are sitting there, and they're going through game situations for, you know, they're going to practice the specifics. You get into your situational football on Friday, and that's when you're going to practice those things. So they were going through the different scenarios so that it's supposed to be a reaction, like, okay, down, distance, time, score, here we go. But I said, you know, the thing that I think no one's taken into account is nowhere in any discussion was there, okay, we're up 21-0. We're in range, and we're still in the first quarter. Yeah. I mean, that's what happened there never happens. All the elements that came together, blown coverage, block punt, muffed punt.
Yeah.
You know, that's a scenario. And you saw it. They had to go to the timeout because I think their plan was, listen, we get close. We want to be aggressive. We want to score. And I think what they said was, we get a 4th-and-1 in their territory with a medium distance field goal, we're going for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that was the breakdown, and that was their plan, and that's what they had discussed and maybe even put on their play sheet. The really big play sheets have all those, what we've already done, in addition to what the plays are. Those are some of the, you know, the reds or the different distances for field goals and different things and how they want to react to it. The problem was it was 21-0. And, you know, you said there's still hope. If they kick the field goal, there's still hope. And I think Bill O'Brien knew that as well. Listen, there is nothing wrong with tacking on 3 more points to go up 24-0.
Mm-hmm.
You said it. Well, because we have 15, you said to your son, because we have 15, we still have hope.
Yep.
Bill O'Brien has to say the same thing. But at 24-0, if Alex Smith were the quarterback, and if you have psyched yourself into believing, like, listen, we can stop this offense. We did it last time. We held them to 24 points. 24 is what the Chiefs scored, and you got a chance to get there.
Yeah.
Right now in the first quarter, and you have to believe that your offense is going to continue to be able to put points on the board. You've got a very good quarterback.
Yeah.
So listen, in the end, is he wrong? I mean, collectively the whole day, he was wrong. The organization was wrong. They didn't give enough talent. Their secondary stinks, okay, and has all year. And so all those are factors that go into it. You've got the crowd kind of taken out of it. I think he thought, let's just put points on the board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then it dovetails into the punt, and it's like, well, if you're going to be conservative with the field goal, why do you get aggressive with the punt?
Mm-hmm.
I think the difference is the punt came after the Chiefs had put a 7 on the board, mm-hmm. and the crowd was back in it. And so now there's momentum. And so now I think he did feel like, listen, not only can they come back, I'm terrified they're going to come back, so we got to go for the knockout blow right there. Listen, at the end of the day, coaches are in the get-it-right business. They didn't win. Bill O'Brien's the face in front of the organization, so he's going to wear it. Secondarily, the quarterback does. Then you get to the GM, eventually the owner, in places like that where the fans are going to hold them accountable. The Chiefs were a better football team. They were favored by 10. And in reality, no matter what Bill O'Brien did there, the Chiefs were supposed to come back and beat them. And that's exactly what they did. And the one thing that frustrates me is all the hand-wringing about Bill O'Brien, to me, takes away from what the Chiefs did.
I agree.
24-0. 21-0 and fumble the ball right there. You're still supposed to win.
Yes.
You don't blow 20-plus point leads.
Yes.
So worrying about Bill O'Brien, not us, right, as
right.
fans, but
sure.
the national people, writing the story as Bill O'Brien's mistakes is just absolutely taking away from what Patrick Mahomes, his teammates, Andy Reid, and his staff did in this game.
I'm with you. Saran Petro, 810 WHB, our guest today, host of the program, middays from 2 to 6. I'm interested in your thoughts on this because I heard you talking about it after the Raven game earlier this year that the Chiefs won. And I talked about this on Friday going into the game. I was talking about coaches' aggressiveness. And we found out a little bit of that. We were just referred to it with Bill O'Brien. You know, how aggressive is Andy Reid going to be? If he has a 4th-and-4 at the Texan 39, is he going to kick a long field goal? Is he going to punt? Or is he going to go for it? You know, how aggressive are the teams going to be, their coaches? What's the personality? And Matthew Derrick at Chiefs Digest was with us last week, and he pointed out, and I thought it was a good observation, that the team that's the underdog can play a little bit looser. The coach can maybe gamble a little bit more. And the team that is the favorite maybe doesn't make as many of those gambles. And in this situation, the Chiefs were a pretty significant favorite. But John Harbaugh, when the Chiefs played the Ravens, he went for it a lot. But there was a situation where he was like all in, and then all of a sudden he had a 4th-and-4, 4th-and-5, and then he wasn't in. But he would go for it on 4th-and-3. And, you know, I look at Bill O'Brien and I say, if you're all in, you're going to be aggressive in this game and you go for the fake punt. And I understand what you're saying, 24-7, try to stop the momentum, you're in the fake punt. Which, by the way, it would have worked if they didn't take forever to snap it, because they had it set up and Sorensen made a great play. But what about that thought that coaches, they're human, they are paid to get it right, but at the same time, you go into a game with a mindset that, by golly, we're going to be aggressive. No holds barred. We're going for it every time we have a chance. But yet I see a lot of coaches that start out that way and then all of a sudden they pull it back. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, and that's the riddle, right?
Yeah.
And that's what they're supposed to figure out and get right. Listen, there's a site, the New York Times has a site, or at least did a story on fourth down, when to go for it and why. And basically at fourth and one, they say it starts at your own nine or your own 10. Really, they say nine, like if you're, you know, you technically can't have fourth and one at your own nine because you got to start at the one.
Yeah.
But if it's realistically, because if you're an inch from the goal line, you're technically at the one.
Okay.
So they basically say fourth and one, you should go for it all the time, any possible scenario. Fourth and two, it moves out to like the 26 or 7, I think. Fourth and three, it moves out to your own like 41, right? And then you get to a spot where the field goal starts to become the better option.
Mm-hmm.
So all these charts say go for it on fourth down, and I think coaches are becoming more liberal with that. And you mentioned John Harbaugh. He did go for it twice on fourth and one against the Titans and was stuffed both times.
True.
I think what has to be remembered is these charts, which are based upon the math that's come before, are based on people not really going for it. The fourth and ones that get converted, and the reason they say that you should do it because of the reward, largely those fourth downs that are converted back in your own territory have come late in games in desperation situations against prevent defenses.
Mm-hmm.
So fourth down is inflated. Success on fourth down is inflated because most of the history of the National Football League of going for it on fourth down are against defenses that don't care if they give up 4 yards to you on fourth and two because they're more interested in draining the clock. They just don't want to get beat with the big play over the top. So all the analytics and all the numbers that have come before now are based upon game situations. And, you know, of course, they drill that down. They say, okay, in these situations, this is what's happened. We're really in new territory if guys are going to follow these charts. If you're going to go for it on fourth and one on your own side, we're in new territory. Do we find that teams get hyped up and their defensive line blows up the offensive line way more often? You know, fourth and one's supposed to be easy, but the Chiefs can't convert it. It's like the worst down and distance I'd like to see. They can't convert third and one.
You're right.
You know, so, you know, I think there you go into it, you assess it beforehand. What plays do we have? And I think everybody operates in a vacuum of just their team. And nobody looks at it and says, well, you know what? The Chiefs defensive line, or more realistically, the Titans defensive line averages 298 pounds. They don't move. They're great in short yardage. They throw big linebackers at it. This is not the team we want to go for it on fourth and one. But fourth and four, when we can put them into a nickel package, we've got options. Now we want to go there. Fourth and three, fourth and four, out at about the 50 or the other 45, that's where we are. That's what those play sheets are supposed to have. And that's what you follow. You have to just, all the thinking has to be done beforehand, because with the clock ticking, you don't have time. And that's what happened to Bill O'Brien, I believe.
Yep.
They had it. They were going to go for it. That was their game plan. But nowhere did they have, we have all the momentum, the crowd is dead, and we're up 21-0. And that made them stop and think, listen, if we get stopped, do we let them back in? You know, 24, yeah, they feel like, okay, we dodged a bullet. But they don't get any more points. So let's tack on the points, and let's try to play some defense. Now, of course, then it blows up in your face. Hindsight's 20/20.
You bet.
And Bill O'Brien tried to use that at the end when he justified the fake punt, when he said, well, you know, we knew we were going to have to score 50. No, you didn't. Nobody has ever, ever gone into a game thinking that. If anyone ever did, it should have been Andy Reid last year.
Yes.
When he had a team that became the first team ever to lose a game scoring 40 points. And then later, the first team ever to lose a game scoring 50 points. It had never happened. So, you know, these scenarios are what you spend all week, why they're only sleeping 3 or 4 hours a day throughout the course of the game week. But then, you know, there's an adage that I use. I even say it to my fourth grade girls basketball team. No battle plan survives combat, right? Everybody's got a plan.
Yep.
The boats are going to go. They're going to hit the beach. We're all going to run off. We're going to go up. We're going to capture this. And then you get there, and there's a machine gun nest where you didn't know there was one.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to adapt and overcome on the fly. And the great ones do. The good ones do pretty good. The mediocre ones don't. And, you know, I think that's the situation. And listen, Bill Belichick went for it on fourth down against the Patriots years ago and was laughed at, against the Colts and Peyton Manning. And he said, listen, he's going to score no matter where we give him the ball.
Right.
And they didn't get it. Colts went down and scored, and he was considered an idiot. And now everybody wants to play the game the way he did. So, listen, game theory, There are a reason why mathematicians get paid a lot of money to figure out game theory when it comes to all different kinds of scenarios. And we watch it play out in real time without four coaches barking in our ears saying,
right,
hey, we got to get to the pass. We need to do this. Mm-hmm. Get this guy in the game. Hey, don't forget, so-and-so's down. He's not in there.
Yep.
You know, it's much more difficult. I will say this. I do believe fans can be the one place we can be better than coaches in watching the game is in the clock and game management of things,
mm-hmm,
because we don't have to call a play.
Right.
We just say the play that didn't work sucked afterwards.
Right.
But we don't have to call a play. We don't have to get personnel in. We don't have to hear the injury reports coming to us. We don't have to hear another coach barking at us that they're going to a nickel. We thought they were going to play dime here, but they're only in a nickel. There's so much more going on. We can get the right answer better, but we're not doing near as many things at the time as those coaches are, and it's much more difficult than we believe.
Absolutely. I just said that to somebody the other day. I said, you know, you try to think clearly when three or four voices are literally in your head through the headset. Absolutely. Before we preview the matchup on Sunday, Mahomes, the speech he gave when they were down 24-0, whenever he gave that speech over there, is just, you know, you and I have talked about Mahomes and the leader that he is. And listen, if Alex Smith's a quarterback, Chiefs are toast. They don't win that game. I think about almost every other quarterback in that situation is toast. There's a handful that could, you know, rally the troops. I think Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, guys like that. But, man, that's all about leadership. That's about guys believing in their quarterback. And
right.
I don't think they come even close to coming back in that game without that leadership.
Okay, so believing in your quarterback, that's the key word,
yep,
there, I think. And, you know, Grunhard and I got into this a little bit because, you know, he was like, hey, you know, it's the speech he gives. It's not the speech. He goes, I've been on that sideline, and you know, it fires you up. I go, so you're saying you didn't try for Steve Bono? Right?
Yeah, all right.
And he's like, no. I mean, you go out there. I'm like, yeah, that's my point. Like, does Patrick Mahomes give them a lift? I'm sure he does. You know, Brian Waters said to me a long time ago, I used to talk to him every week, and Brian said, look, he said, what you want is a coach that will put you in a position to win. He goes, you can have an idiot for a coach. You still got to go out there and run whatever play he calls, because a bad play is better than no play. A bad play executed by 11 guys is better than 11 guys trying to do their own thing. He said, so no matter what, you're going to go do what's called. He said, but there is more of a belief and probably more of an energy when you believe that the coach is giving you something that's going to work. And I thought that was a great insight into the players, that why good coaches work, because he calls a play and they believe in it, because this guy has had, and why do they believe in it? Because he's had success.
Yep.
He's had success in his past, and he's had success with this team, these players. They've come up to the line, had a play that they thought, hey, this is pretty good, and watched it go for 28. And so when that coach makes a call, they're ready to go because he has put them in positions to succeed. He has called plays where they've been able to de-cleat a guy on a crackback block, which I know are illegal now, but whatever it is, where it's set you up to be really successful at your position, and that confidence grows. Patrick Mahomes is the same thing. Quarterbacks are the same thing. Listen, you can do an okay job of blocking, and Patrick Mahomes will stay alive and then fire a dart down the field. That made you look good. The team had success. So I think, listen, the rah-rah speeches and the let's go, that's part of his personality, and it's definitely not a negative, okay? His competitive nature, the fact that he doesn't quit, he always feels that they're in the game. The Chiefs have never lost a game by more than one score with Patrick Mahomes under center.
Mm-hmm.
Never.
Yeah.
Never. They've only lost, what, at the end of the day, 9 games with him? And they won, I think he won, what did he win, 11 this year? And because he was out for one of the wins, and he won 12, and they won the Broncos game, so he's won 24 playoff games. He won 26 games.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but they have never lost by more than one score. So even when they lose, he is a guy that keeps you in the game. You are always going to be within range no matter what happens early. He got down big to the Patriots in New England last year. He brought them back. He got down to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. He brought them back. So every one of those guys knows that they're not dead. If Alex Smith, you're right, if he's there, Alex Smith doesn't bring anybody back from 24. He'd never done it. Alex Smith had lost a number of games by multiple scores. He doesn't have that ability, physical ability,
mm-hmm,
mental ability, to go out and lift you back up to do that. And there's no doubt that Patrick Mahomes inspires his teammates, but I think it's mostly with his mental ability to digest the offense, see the field, and then his physical ability to deliver the football.
I've always believed that leaders have to be calm, cool, and collected for the most part. And
well, then, listen, leaders have to be good, right?
Right.
Like whether you like it or not, a locker room is still a high school mentality. It's a juvenile mentality.
Mm-hmm.
The best athlete is the leader. Nobody was ever a great leader being the 53rd guy on the roster. You played Little League Baseball, the guy who was barely on the team and batted 040 was never the guy who was going to fire people up. You can't do it. You could be a complete jerk and bat 500, and you're a leader. It's how it works. And so the Chiefs have the ultimate combination. They have a guy who is batting 500 and has all those leadership characteristics. Because there are guys that can spin it, you know, maybe close to. Maybe Patrick Mahomes is the best thrower of the football. I'm starting to believe that. Jay Cutler and Jeff George could really spin the football, but they were you know, melon heads on the sideline. This guy is all the leadership, all the intangibles, the Steve DeBergs, the Joe Montanas, the guy that has the swagger, and then on top of it, he delivers the ball like nobody else.
It's fun to watch, no doubt. Sir, in Petra, 810 WHB, Kansas City, host of the program, middays, 2 to 6, is our guest today on the Sports Ticket. All right, I read an article, and I'm really getting annoyed I try to avoid it, but I get annoyed by people that write a national story, and I know they don't understand everything, but sometimes it's okay to actually take 5 minutes and do some research. All you got to do is pull up the box score and look. Even if you didn't watch the Tennessee Titans Chiefs game, that was the last time the Chiefs lost, by the way. I saw an article on CBSSports.com talking about how the Titans are going to win this Sunday because the Chiefs offense was nearly, they said the Chiefs offense was basically perfect against Tennessee the first time around, and Titans still found a way to win. And I'm like, let's see, nowhere in the story did it mention that was Mahomes' first game back after the dislocated kneecap. He did point out that Mahomes threw for 446 yards and 3 touchdowns, but he wasn't as mobile. The play calling wasn't as wide open with that lack of mobility. Nearly perfect on offense. They had 530 yards against the Titans, but they settled for 4 field goals. They had a 3rd-and-2 late, couldn't close the game on offense. They were up 10-7. Their running back, Williams, fumbled the ball, returned for a touchdown, missed an extra point, had that bad 3rd-and-2 play, as I referred to. Bad snap on a field goal attempt, didn't even get off a field goal. Had a field goal blocked at the end of the game to tie the game. The offense had the ball 38 minutes, the Chiefs did, 78 plays to 49. The Chiefs' defense allowed 8.7 yards a carry, despite only being on the field for 22 minutes. And yes, it is true, Derrick Henry had a big game. He ran for 188 and 2 scores, and Tannehill hurt them running the football. But my goodness gracious, that sounds far from perfect to me. To me, I remember that game so vividly, and as soon as that game was over, I'm like, that is one of the biggest giveaways of a game I've almost ever seen. And the Chiefs made so many mistakes, and still Mahomes had a chance for them to kick a field goal, had they executed, to tie the game and send it in overtime. I have a lot of confidence the Chiefs are going to win this Sunday because I don't think all those fluky things that happened for the Titans last couple times they played the Chiefs are going to happen this Sunday.
Well, and the turnovers being the biggest part, really blocked kicks and muffed field goals really are turnovers, right? Because when you're in position to get points and you don't get points, that's a problem. I mean, that's like a turnover, right? It's like they might as well throw an interception right there. So those are turnovers, and that's what the Titans have done here is basically taking the ball away here in these first two games. You know, they forced the Ravens into a situation to play from behind, something they can't do. And Lamar Jackson is not the passer that Patrick Mahomes is. He throws between the numbers and about 10 or 12 yards across the line of scrimmage in the air. And he was forced to do things he's not used to doing. He was forced to hold the football instead of a quick play action and get a slant to the tight end, which is a lot of what their passing offense was. Listen, I had a bet with Jeff Chedia from NFL.com. I still have it. We were betting on who would win a Super Bowl first, Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. I said, listen, you don't run your way to Super Bowls. Mahomes will be there. He said, well, this Ravens team is special. He goes, I'll take that bet because I'll win it this year. The Ravens are going to win it this year. And I said, listen, no doubt, I mean, this is my biggest hurdle, but once we clear this one, you go with the quarterback who can throw the ball because playing playoff teams, 3 games, or in the Titans' case, 4 games in a row, you're probably going to have to come from behind at some point. You're going to have to overcome a bad day, and quarterbacks overcome a bad day. Listen, we can get excited about Derrick Henry. He was running for 180-plus yards against the New England Patriots. And what was the score? 14-13.
Yes.
Right? 14-13 was the score. You mentioned the day he had against the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Chiefs were lining up a field goal to send it into overtime. And the coin flip maybe would have decided it. So you were 50-50 at that point. And it wouldn't have been going to overtime if all the other things that you had hadn't occurred. Listen, I give Mike Vrabel great credit. He is playing, he is coaching to his team's strengths. He's got a quarterback that's a veteran and doesn't make mistakes, and he's got a great offensive line, and he's got a running back that's really tough to bring down, and he's got an okay defense. Statistically speaking, that's what they were. Let's call it average-ish. They're 12th in the NFL in points allowed, 21st in yards allowed. Okay, so this is not a lights-out defense.
No.
So he is playing to his strength. Run the ball. He goes into a game knowing, listen, if we're -3, we lose. Andy Reid doesn't go into a game like that, all right? But Mike Vrabel has played to his strength, and they've been able to get the turnovers, and they've been able to keep Derrick Henry healthy. They've been able to get the big plays when they needed it, and they have won. And give great credit to Vrabel, because most coaches can't hold their water and stick to that game plan. You basically have to say, listen, if we turn it over 3 times, they get a couple of quick scores, you tip your cap. We're going to try. But reality, guys, if you're sitting there talking to your coaching staff, we lose. So how do we create turnovers early? Is there a place to steal a possession with a fake punt, with a fake field goal, going for it on a fourth down? Do we have a couple of magic plays? Where do we do this? That has to be the mindset of the Titans coming here. And listen, I'll go back to a couple of other things you said. You know, you talked earlier about the underdog. Right, the underdog can play free and easy and go for it. The Titans are the underdog in this game. They have that opportunity again. The Chiefs became the underdog when they got down 24-0.
Yes.
And what do? They threw and threw and threw. Listen, the modern NFL, and I know old guys like my age and older don't want to hear this. You throw to win, you run when you're winning. And if you don't believe that, all you need to do is go back and watch last week's games and look at the play-by-play of last week's games. Mm-hmm. Down 24-21 with less than 2 minutes to go, but driving, and on the Texans' side of the field, the Chiefs had run the football 3 times for 1 yard.
Yep.
3 times for 1 yard. Patrick Mahomes took off on a 21-yard run that gave him 22 yards. That's all they would have at halftime. And the bulk of it came on a scramble, which was actually a designed pass. And that's the other thing. You can design passes, and particularly when they play man-to-man coverage, there are great running lanes for your quarterback. And that counts, too. But as far as designing the running game, the Chiefs had everything go wrong for them, and yes, they started having a couple of things go right for them, like the fumbled kickoff. But they blew them up, and everybody talks about, well, short fields. They had four drives over like 75 yards, a couple over 90 in that game, right? And how did they do it? They threw the ball. Andy Reid became the underdog. The shackles were taken away. He said, I got to throw, and they threw on every down. I'm going to tell you, the changeup for the Chiefs is the running game. They still run the ball too much. If they don't win the Super Bowl, it has nothing to do with being the 21st or 22nd best rushing team. The problem is that they're the 21st or 22nd best rushing team, and at times Andy Reid still calls plays like they're number 8 or 9. All right? If they threw the ball on every down, it probably gives them the best chance to win. All right? You run only to get the rush off of Patrick Mahomes. They threw on every down, and they were the best team they could possibly be. Listen, they will be shackled at times by the fact that Andy Reid is an old-timer. Even though he's as progressive as it gets for older coaches, he still at times feels like, hey, we got to go run the ball. And I remember Dick Vermeil telling me that one of the things he would do with Mike Martz in 99 was, listen, this is all great, but every now and then, don't forget, we got 28 in the backfield. And he said we would run it. And people gave a lot of credit that, you know, after the fact that Dick Vermeil kept Mike Martz in check because he would keep the running game, and you have to win. You have to run to win football games. And that's absolutely not the case. If you get up and you can see the finish line, there's not enough time left, and you can burn the clock out that way, yes, you should do it. But 3rd and 1 for the Kansas City Chiefs is not a running down. It's a go for it on 4th down. We know we're going twice. Run
yes.
our regular offense.
Thank you.
Because Patrick Mahomes completes 66% of his passes. So run your regular offense twice, and in all likelihood, the math is overwhelming that you will get more than a yard because he finds receivers. So I think that's one of the things that hopefully Andy Reid takes from this game. You talk about being aggressive. You have to have the firepower to be successful when you're aggressive. And Andy Reid finally found himself in a situation where he had no choice, and the Chiefs unleashed an unholy fury on the Texans, and one that they should ride all the rest of the way to a championship.
Well, I think you made a great point, especially in that 3rd and 1 situation. Hey, you got 2 downs to get it. You got to know that when you make that 3rd down call, whether you run it or not. But I'm with you there. Put it in 15's hands and make the right decision, and normally he does. All right, Chris Jones' injury. What do we know about his status for Sunday? And there are rumors out there, I don't know if it's true or not, that he hurt his calf by playing basketball.
Yeah, I'm the source of those rumors.
Okay.
listen, first of all, we don't know. We'll know more by what he does today when we get the practice report later today. Is he listed as limited or out? Calf injuries are horrible. I mean, you really can't just gut it through. You have to have that explosion. And so until you're confident that you're not going to re-injure it, wherever that point is, I'm no doctor, you just can't play the guys. I mean, that's one of the worst things you can hear. Calf injury, you saw Mark Ingram try to play through it, and he wasn't anywhere near what he had been. And so that was a big boost to the Titans last week. So we'll know more this afternoon when we hear that practice report. I think if he's not a full go, then he's probably not going to play. We'll see if he at least gets out there and is limited. But, you know, he was listed as limited on Thursday because he got hurt at the very end of practice, so they had to put some kind of designation on him. But then not practicing on Friday, he had no hope of playing on Sunday, and he really looked bad during warm-up. So, you know, I'd say 75% chance he doesn't play. But, again, I'm no doctor, and we'll see what happens today. Now, as far as how he got hurt, the Chiefs say he got hurt on the next-to-last play of practice on Thursday, and I take them at their word. The information of where this comes from is on Wednesday, I was standing in the locker room, and all year they have a basketball goal up, regulation 10-foot goal. They've got about a 20-foot ceiling in the locker room. So they play these two-on-two basketballs in an area because of where the lockers stick out to. That's, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 feet each side of what a lane would be and goes out to about the three-point arc. Okay. And they play two-on-two basketball. Now, you can imagine when Chris Jones and Mike Pinnell are posting each other up. Chris Jones is 6'6", 280. I mean, they list him still at 300, but he's a lot slimmer this year than he was in the past. He's in great shape. Mike Pinnell is every bit of 6'5 and 320. Those are two big people, and they play. And then Colin Saunders always plays with Chris Jones. He's about 6 foot and 300 pounds. It was Bashaud Breeland that was playing with Mike Pinnell. They have played all year two-on-two basketball like super competitive guys would play at the gym. I'm not going to tell you it's game seven of the NBA Finals, but these are big individuals moving, and they are playing all-out basketball, which is funny because in the offseason, Patrick Mahomes was chastised for playing basketball and reminded, Brett Beach even said on my show, we've already talked to Patrick, he knows he's not supposed to play basketball, and that won't happen again. We just can't take a chance that his competitive juices get going, and he ends up getting hurt on the basketball floor. Because of that, all year we have stood in that locker room. And listen, it's present when you hear the audio because they scream, they yell, there's a lot of profanity going on. It ruins a lot of the video and audio that you have that you're trying to get from the guys that are willing to talk during that time. And we've talked about it. Like, when somebody gets hurt, something's going to change. Wednesday, I'm standing talking to Vahe Gregorian of the Kansas City Star, and I hear a crash. Somebody went down. I turn and look, and for a split second, Chris Jones' foot was turned the absolute wrong direction. At least that's what I thought for about half a second. And then I realized his shoe had just come off and spun around. So it gave you kind of an optical illusion that his foot was pointing the wrong direction. Now, he laid there for 5, 6, 7 seconds, long enough for me to say to Vahe, Vahe, look at his leg. And Vahe looked and did a double take. He saw the same thing I did. Then you realize that, no, the shoe is kind of off his heel, and it's just kind of spun around on his toes. And you realize that it's just kind of an optical illusion. He gets up. They quit playing basketball. Now, this is what I said. I've never seen a pickup basketball game that ends before a winner is determined. Now, Nate Taylor of The Athletic says they went on to play. I don't remember them going on to play, but I'm not telling you that that was my whole objective because Chris Jones hadn't been listed as hurt. He got up. He walked away. I didn't think anything of it because he walked away. But did he get hurt at that time? Did he get slightly hurt and aggravated in practice the next day? I don't know. He went through practice on Wednesday. There was no mention of him. Thursday, he comes out with a limited designation, and Friday, he doesn't practice. I don't know what happened. I don't know Chris Jones' body. Only Chris Jones knows when he really got hurt. My assumption is that is what happened, and it's just a coincidence that he went down in a basketball game. But if he didn't get hurt in that basketball game, if they keep it up, I guarantee you, you will hear a story about somebody getting hurt in one of those basketball games because it's not the first time I've seen guys go crashing to the floor. Basically, a carpet floor with no padding underneath is what you've got. It's like carpet over concrete is what that floor is. It's why the ball bounces true and everything. At some point, if they continue that practice, somebody absolutely will get hurt. It's inevitable. Did it happen this time? I don't know. But I know he went down and laid there for a little while on Wednesday.
Interesting. All right, your predictions. Chiefs are going to win. What's your score prediction on this one?
I'm going to go 31-17. Listen, I like Mike Vrabel a lot. I had a chance to talk to him for about a half hour out in Tahoe at the American Century Championships this year, and very different than when we covered him when he was a surly, sour, angry player at the end of his career. But he's a great guy, and I think he's a really good football coach that soaked up a lot from playing for Bill Belichick and then coaching under Urban Meyer. I think he learned a lot about what it takes to be a successful coach. So I think the Titans will be tough, but everything you just said, they had literally everything go their way in the last game, and the Chiefs were lining up a field goal to send it into overtime. I don't think everything goes their way again in this game. The Chiefs special teams can't keep playing this poorly. They've got to play better than they have played most of this year, and certainly better than they played in that last game. I think Derrick Henry will go for 100. I'll tell you this. The Chiefs are 9-0 this year when they allow less than 110 yards rushing. The Titans are 10-0 in the regular season, three more playoff games, make it 13-0 all time when Derrick Henry rushes for 100 yards. So keep that in mind. He's played now 66 football games. 13 times he's rushed for 100 yards. The legend of Derrick Henry is growing quite tall. Mm-hmm. He's now somehow Jim Brown times Walter Payton plus Bo Jackson. Mm-hmm. And that's simply not the case. He has been stopped in the past. He can be stopped. He's playing his best football. It's probably more difficult now than ever before. But 52 times he's been held to less than 100 yards. Chiefs are 9-0 when they hold to players to under 100 yards rushing. Hold the opposition to under 110 yards rushing. But the other side of that is when they give up more than 110, they're still 4-4. You know, it's not game over. And the Texans are, the Titans are 26-26 when they, or 26-27 when he doesn't rush for 100 yards in his career in the regular season and postseason. So it's not just game over if he doesn't get to 100 yards. But we know the strongest statistic is, can they control the ball? And Derrick Henry's the guy that will control it. I think he'll probably get his 110, 120, 130. But I don't think all the other things will go their way, and I think the Chiefs win 31-17.
All right, real quickly, who do the Chiefs face in the Super Bowl then, Niners or Packers?
You know, I know they're a dog and everybody loves the Niners, but pretty much rule of thumb when you get to the postseason, you don't get to the conference championship game without being good. And there's kind of this feeling like the Packers are this upstart wild card. They did win 13 games, and when you line up the two quarterbacks, who would you rather have?
Right.
I'd rather have Aaron Rodgers. And I think that's largely, a lot of the times, what playoff games come down to, right? There's a reason why only once since 2002 has a quarterback not named Roethlisberger, Manning, or Brady represented the AFC. Because when those quarterbacks line up, they win. And the only guys that they lose to are the other guys. Well, Aaron Rodgers hasn't had maybe as good a season as he's had in the past. He's still the best quarterback on that field. The Packers play this game with revenge. They were humiliated by the 49ers. So I'm going to call for the Packers for the upset. Give me Chiefs-Packers in a replay of Super Bowl I. And it'd be really fitting in the 100th year to get a replay of what was the first game. They had no idea how big the Super Bowl was going to be. But why not replay that game for the 100th anniversary? I think it's Chiefs and Packers. But I think the Packers-Niners is really a field goal game that could go either way.
I would love it because, of course, everybody's getting excited. People paid high-priced tickets to see Mahomes versus Rodgers back on October 27th at Arrowhead. Of course, Mahomes didn't play, and I thought, well, that might be the only time they could have played each other, and that won't happen. But it could if the Packers and Chiefs both win. That's what everybody, I think, would love to see in the Super Bowl. And we usually, when we want something so badly, for me at least, it ends up that one of those two teams will probably lose, or maybe both, and then we'll have the game that we maybe don't want. But it would be awesome if it was Rodgers versus Mahomes. All right, so the question for you, off the wall, to let you go, before we let you go, is this, Saran. Patrick Mahomes is going to get a lot of money very soon. He's going to get a huge extension contract. It's going to be the highest paid. He's probably going to be the highest paid player maybe in all professional sports here in America. My question to you is, if you, Saran Petro, got that contract that Mahomes is going to get, what's the first thing you do with that money, or the first thing that you buy?
Am I Patrick Mahomes' age, or am I my age now?
You know, for fun, why don't you answer that from both perspectives? How about that?
Now, first thing I do is finish the mortgage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You know, to me, that's the ultimate thing, is when you can have a house and know that, you know, I mean, good Lord, with all the taxes you got to pay, you still got to do that. But for the most part, to be free and clear of a mortgage, so as an old fart, that'd be it. Okay. I'd call up the bank and say, all right, what's the number? Here it is. And I'd drive down with a big smile on my face and hand it to him, and then I'd figure out what's next. You know, if you want, okay, that's boring, what's the fun thing? I think I might buy either a lake house on Lake Michigan, or a condo in Maui. Okay. I've been fortunate enough to be able to vacation in both those spots, and they're both places I would like to go back to and spend serious time. If I were Patrick Mahomes' age and I got that contract, man, probably a car. I mean, let's be honest. Most guys are car guys. I certainly am. I'd be walking down buying whatever car I wanted. You know, right now for me, that might be that new rear-engine Corvette that's coming out here in 2020. Go plunk down on that. But I don't know. I guess maybe I should be thinking, you know, Maserati or something like that. But I think if you're Mahomes, you go celebrate with a new car.
First thing I'd buy, if you're asking, which you're not, but I'm going to tell you anyway, is a plane, a private plane with my own pilot. That's a package deal. That's the first thing I'm buying if I have $40 million a year. Why?
But you know what?
Because they can fly me wherever I want.
But the problem is, because I had a chance to, actually this story's been told by others. I normally wouldn't say it, but it's been said on the radio. Got a ride home, he called it. From the American Century Championships in Lake Tahoe on Cliff Illig's plane,
okay.
Which is the owner of one of the founders of Cerner, and of course the owner of Sporting Kansas City, and a great guy, and his wife Bonnie, wonderful woman. And they gave us a ride home. That's how they termed it. And he has not one, but two of his own planes,
okay,
on his own pilots. And it is the most magnificent thing ever. And I will tell you, you've nailed it. You absolutely nailed it, because traveling that way, it took what was going to be drive the rental car to Reno an hour, then Reno to Vegas, layover, Vegas to Kansas City, and then KCI out to wherever you live, to a 10-minute cab ride to the plane, land downtown, and then, of course, Cliff's car was waiting for him,
mm-hmm,
to take him. He was driving over to the sporting game that night. It took a 13-hour door-to-door travel and made it about 3 hours and 15 minutes. It is incredible. I'll never get that opportunity again, but it was the most incredible thing ever. But those planes cost, like, if you're gonna have your own pilot, like $14 billion. I mean, I don't even know that Patrick Mahomes has enough money that you'd have it. And then the maintenance on the planes and the pilots are something I've been told upwards of $1 million a year on everything you've got to spend there, with having your hangar and then the pilots being on call and how much it is. So it comes back to the old line by Chris Rock, who said, oh, no, no, Shaq's not wealthy. Shaq is rich. The guy who signs Shaq's check, that guy's wealthy. Patrick Mahomes will be rich. Clark Hunt and the Hunt family are still wealthy. The wealthy buy planes.
Okay, fine. I'll get a cheaper plane. Are you happy? My goodness, God. Blew that whole dream of mine all away. That was rough.
I just don't want you to be aspiring to something that you're still not at when you get to $200 million.
Well, I'm 44. I'm nowhere close to a million, so I don't think I have much of a chance anyway. But anyway, you know, it's great to think about it for a moment. So I'll just go get a pickup truck. How's that sound? A used one.
There you go.
All right, man. How do people listen to your show, and how can they follow you on social media so they can rip your takes on Twitter or agree with you?
Yes, at Soren Petro, SorenPetro, and of course the 810 app. You can download it at your app store or listen to us online at 810WHB.com.
As always, appreciate the time, buddy. Take care, and hopefully the Chiefs are celebrating a Super Bowl victory in early February.
Always my pleasure, Wade. Thanks thanks for having me, buddy. It's always a lot of fun.
One of the best in the business, Soren Petro, 810WHB, Kansas City. You can listen to him on the program middays 2 to 6 p.m.